So this is a story that happened a long, long time ago.
Yeah.
Once on the edge of a beautiful fir forest, like the fir forests we have around here with the big cedar trees in them, there was a really beautiful rose bush that was growing. And every year that rose bush put out most beautiful flowers. And each flower seemed to be more beautiful than the next one. And finally, one day, this rose bush gave a really big, big bud. It was so big, it was so heavy, and so laden that it fell over and touched the ground. And when it touched the ground, it opened up, and there was a baby boy. So the rose had given birth to a baby boy. And in the kingdom where this rosebush was, there was a queen, and she loved to go walking in the forest and through the meadows. And one day she was out walking, and she heard this crying at the edge of the forest. And she went to investigate, and she found this little baby. Do you know the story? So she found this little baby, and she picked it up and said, "Oh, I'll take you and raise you." And she wrapped the baby in her purple veil and took him back to the castle. And there she rocked him in a beautiful cradle and sang lullabies to him and fell deeply in love with this beautiful, beautiful child. Just like all our parents have done. Have fallen deeply in love with you beautiful children. And the king, being a kingly sort in the old days, was out fighting battles. And after a few weeks, he came home and he found the queen was rocking this baby. And he was really, really happy that here was a child. Because they hadn't had any children for a long time. They were getting older and past the age of bearing children. But they had once had seven sons. And each of those sons, as they had grown up, had gone out to battle and been killed one by one. And so the king was going out to fight to avenge their death. And So he was very happy to have another son. And they raised this son with a lot of love and taught him poetry and taught him music. And he also learned how to ride a horse and do swordsmanship. And at one point, he was going to be made a knight so that he also could go out on the battlefield. And the night before, he was in the chapel, just being quiet, just sitting, feeling honored to become a knight. And his mother came and sat with him. And his father came and sat with him. And he realized, he was taking on a lot of responsibility for the whole kingdom. And then the next day he was made a knight, and he and the king went out on the battlefields. And during that time there was a raging battle, and the king was knocked off his horse, and a spear was thrown to him, and he called to his son, "Avenge my death, avenge my death." And so the son saw who had killed his father and went riding off after him and ran into the woods and knocked him off his horse and was about ready to spear him when he saw there was a beautiful rose bush there blooming on the side at the edge of the forest, and he saw that there was blood spattered on the rose bush. And something inside of him just came awake and alive and he felt sick at heart for all the hatred and the revenge that he was feeling. And he said to the man before him, his enemy, he said, "I've touched my true humanity. Please, quick, flee. Leave me. That's why I don't hurt you." And the enemy fled and ran away. And the Rose Prince looked around him and went back out into the battlefield, and he gathered together all the flags from all the different nations, every one of them. He gathered them together. And he stood in the middle of the battlefield and shouted, "This is not the way of humanity. This is not the way we are together. And we must stop this fighting. And we must see each other as human beings." And bit by bit, one by one, all the warriors laid down their swords, their lances. And they gathered round and they began to look at each other and saw that no matter what the differences they thought were there, truly they were all just one human body. And so they all took their flags and they walked, went away, went home. And vowed not to go to war anymore. And the Rose Prince went to the edge of the forest and said, "Where is my Rose Mother?" And a nightingale flew into the trees and said, "Oh, she died some time ago." And so the Rose Prince said, "Well, I want to become a rose again." And the nightingale said, "I will sing to you, and as I sing to you, you can become a rose." And so as the dusk fell in the evening, the Rose Prince listened to the calling of the nightingale and felt himself putting roots into the moss, into the loam, deep into the ground, and felt his arms turning into branches and his smile turning into a rose. And as long as there was peace in the land, he continued to put forth roses. He said, "Now I am fragrance and the beauty of life." And everyone came by and admired that beautiful rose and felt deep peace in their hearts when they smelled the rose, when they touched its blossom, when they looked at its beauty. You know, we all have a nature of rose within us. We have the nature of beauty, of fragrance, of sweetness. And we gather together as a community to touch that, to remember that. Because sometimes there's a lot of things happen in the world that are scary and that are hard, and we forget how truly from the very beginning we were just beings of love. Just like the queen felt when she picked up that baby. Just like you were when you were first born. And when you come and be with us, you help us remember that we are all beautiful and sweet, because we look at you and it helps us to remember that. And so we all come together as a community to remember that as well. And I think that's why you guys come be with us too, to help you to remember. Because I think probably there's things that happen in your life that you forget sometimes, do you? How wonderful and beautiful you are. And how much you are loved. And how much love you give. Do you forget that sometimes? So today and this whole weekend is a weekend which we've dedicated to all touching that, to create, help create a world for you to grow up in that is filled with roses and sweetness, and supports you in living that way in your lives. That your beauty continues to have a place to shine, and your talents and your goodness continues to have a place to in this world to shine. So thank you for coming and being with us. And I don't know, are you joining us later today, or are you going to just be off playing in the garden? Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Okay. And it'd be really nice if other people want to join you anytime.
Anyone is welcome.
Anytime?
Anytime. Just pop on in, and we're running a pretty loose program today. Okay. So a lot of ebb and flow is fine.
Okay. And does everyone know where the garden is? It's just straight up this.
I have no idea.
Can you tell us where it is?
It's pretty near here. You just have to cross the streets, and you just go.
Two blocks this way.
Two blocks. Then you just take a turn and you're at the door. And then you're going to open the door. Right. Then you're
at the door. So you just walk up the street, huh?
Yeah.
You can't miss it.
No, because my car will be by it.
Good.
And my car's great.
And hopefully you guys will be making a lot of noise, so we'll be... There they are.
Yeah, we can make a lot of noise.
No, we have to kill you. Can I jump? Bang, bang, bang. It's like...
We're doing a formal lunch at around 11:30. So
okay.
People will have to join us at that time for a formal lunch.
Okay.
We've got plenty of food.
If you forgot your sack lunch today, the kids have provided food for us. Food for our hearts and food for our tummies, too. Thank you. And then can you stand up and bow to the Sangha? In the back, please come forward. Especially if you have any trouble hearing at all, come close. Kids were all really touched by that story. A lot of them had tears in their eyes. Somehow that's the difference, I guess, between television and touching something real. Yeah, they know this world that we live in. It takes a lot of courage to be a human being. It takes a lot of courage because we never really know what's going to happen in the next moment. And I think we've all lived our lives and had great shocks at different points. And we think if we're planning for the future, we can protect ourselves from further shocks. And if we, you know, distract ourselves enough, then somehow we'll be safe. So it takes a lot of trust to live in the present moment. We have to entrust ourselves to what's right here. And we touch trust when we do that, because when we entrust ourselves to this moment, you know, we see there's the voice of children. There's the wind in the trees. There's the smile of my friends. So our practice is very much a practice of touching trust. That when we take the next step, the ground beneath us is solid. And when we practice like that, you know, we become filled, our heart becomes filled. It is okay. And I think part of the problem with trusting things just as they are is that we sometimes have a hard time trusting ourselves, because we know we get swept away, and we say and do things that we sometimes regret later, and and so if we make kind of a tight enough structure around us, a good enough plan, it protects us both from the past and from the future. And that's kind of an illusion that we live in all the time. And when we, you know, begin practicing mindfulness and being entrusting ourselves to what's right here, to this present moment, we find that it is okay. We are okay. Bit by bit, we begin to see that. The world meets us. And in that being, entrusting ourselves in the present moment, we are able to include what's right here. The distant sound of the traffic, the sense of our body on the cushion. And we start to move a little way naturally. It's not like we even are doing anything, but our lives cease to be so unipolar, so focused on me and mine and what I want and how things should be, to include other things, to include the world. And we, bit by bit, start to see that we are really a multitude. That we include the distant traffic, we include the clouds, we include the spring flowers in who we are in our lives. And that's simply that is the practice of mindfulness. It's that easy. When we are sitting on our cushion, you know, and we're breathing in or we're breathing out, we're including our breath. We're including our body. We're including the sounds. We're including the community. And it's very wonderful. And trust begins to develop all by itself. Because we are also included in all of that. And we see that we are so much bigger than we thought we were. And that is really the first step in love. And we also have something that helps protect us, and also is an expression of that love, and that is the 5 mindfulness trainings. It's originally were the 5 precepts, and we can see them as something that we do. But truly, they are something more that expresses itself. They express themselves naturally through our life as we continue to practice. As we touch that multi-centered being that we truly are, and we let go a little bit of the me and the mine and how I think it should be, which is to say we touch that love that connects us all, that connects everything, then naturally the precepts, the mindfulness trainings, become an expression of who we are. If you and I are exactly the same, which we are at some level, then it's natural that we treat each other well. Yeah. If the trees and shrubs and clouds are no other than who we are, then it's natural that we take care of them as we take care of our own children. And that is the font and the energy from which the mindfulness trainings arise. They're not something outside of ourselves that we try to do, but something that spontaneously arises as a true expression of our deeper understanding of who we are. And the Buddha said, when he looked up at the morning star, "I am large, I contain multitudes. I am all beings. I am the grass and the rabbit. I am the salmon and the eagle." And we practice in that way. We practice, you know, until our discriminatory thought falls away, and then we find what is the most true about ourselves, of all existence, that we are a part of it, that we can never be separate from it. And there's something really important about that. Because at one level, you know, it is true that being part of everything, we can really say there's no birth and no death. There's just changing of forms. And to see beyond that self-identification it is a place of great freedom. And with it comes the ability then to choose. To choose the world that we're creating. And that's what the five mindfulness trainings encourage us and point us in a particular direction towards. Choosing the kind of world that reflects the truest reality of our existence. When we see there's no birth, there's no death, there's no coming, there's no going, there's no meaning, inherent, intrinsic meaning, then we have this great gift as human beings of choosing the world we want to create. And that's pretty much what we've dedicated this weekend towards, choosing what it is we want to be nourishing, feeding, and seeing blossom in our own hearts, our own lives. And as a community, then seeing, having that blossom in the world. There is a new, it's not too new, but it's a little bit new, expression of the five mindfulness trainings. And as I said, you know, when I took them, they were precepts. When I took them with Thay, they were precepts. And then there was an emphasis on wanting it not to be do not kill, do not lie, to have the precepts speak as some positive. And so then they came in the form of the five mindfulness trainings that you're most familiar with. And then recently, in the last couple of years, they were added to and translated it. Slightly different, like not translated, they were added to, they became more wordy too. And tomorrow we will have a transmission ceremony, and it will be of the new five mindfulness trainings. I've kind of held back because I knew that they're going to change again. But see, that's really good practice, you know. It's like that. What this is about is looking into our own hearts and minds. It's not about what somebody else is saying. You know, it's how this lives in our own lives. I have, over the years, spoken about how, when I took them as precepts, they meant one thing to me. And then I took them, because I practiced them, I found that they kept changing and they kept appearing in new ways in my life. And yes, I've talked a little bit about some of them. Every one of them has been a basis for transforming my consciousness, how I see the world, how I think about the world, how I act in the world. Every one of them has been significant at some point. And I wanted to talk a little bit about the first mindfulness training, which I think holds all the other ones, as they all hold each other. and what it's meant in my life. It's the one about do not kill. Aware of the suffering caused by the destruction of life, I am committed to cultivating the insight of interbeing and compassion, and learning ways to protect the lives of people, animals, and plants, and minerals. I am determined not to kill, not to let others kill, and not to support any act of killing in the world, in my thinking, or in my way of life. Seeing that harmful actions arise from anger, fear, greed, and intolerance, which in turn come from dualistic and discriminative thinking, I will cultivate openness, non-discrimination, and non-attachment to views in order to transform violence, fanaticism, and dogmatism in myself and in the world. So that's the new reiteration of the five mindfulness trainings. It's called Reverence for Life. You know, being a child of the 60s, a young person of the 60s, of course I was involved in, not vehemently, but nevertheless very much involved in the protests of the Vietnam War. as all of us, I believe, in this country, no matter what we say about it, carry the wounds of that war. The Vietnamese call it the American War. And really never had a place to look at that within our culture, I don't think. So when I first heard Thay speak, which was in the early 80s, I couldn't stop crying. And I don't even know what he was talking about, but it was like the whole of the grief and shame and horror of what happened in Vietnam was there in the room. This little bald monk in exile. And through the 80s, I was a tax resister. We didn't pay taxes, but we wrote letters to all our Congress people, the president. It was President Reagan at that point, who, where there was a large military buildup happening, a huge percentage of the budget was going towards war, military buildup. And, of course, eventually, the IRS took our savings account and with interest and penalties. And we thought, well, maybe that's not the best way to to try to oppose war in the world. And avenues of action are taken away from us, we have to look really deeply to find ways then of manifesting what we want to see manifest in the world. We have to really think about it. We have to talk within our sangha. We have to go inside ourselves and listen really deeply and carefully. And in practicing that, it became how important it was to have peace in my own heart if there was to be peace in the world. And you're looking for Dan?
Yes.
Thank you.
So it's really a gift when we can't be active outside ourselves sometimes. That can be really something both helpful because then we can really look inside and pay attention to what our own mind and our own heart is doing minute by minute, day by day. And if we stay committed in that way, and, you know, of course, there are angry thoughts and there are difficulties and reactions and dualistic thinking and discrimination, of course, because we live in this individual body. But nevertheless, we are also not losing sight of, not only do we live as an individual, we live as a community that is completely interconnected. And it's not just a community of people, it is a community of clouds and ocean and grasses and trees and birds and mammals. And all peoples. And we're part of all that. And we'll never be separate from it. Those two things are equally true. And the five mindfulness trainings express that side of emptiness, that nothing is left out. We're all part of all of it. So what arises in our minds and hearts and how we take care of ourselves in that is very important. Because that is naturally then what gets manifested in the world. Without any goal at all, with any thought of anything, coming back. Most recently, I think we all know that very recently a new budget has been passed in our country that gives the military 5% more than they wanted or asked for. and we've found a new way. We put solar panels across the whole south side of the barn. There's no economic rationale behind this. However, it means that because of the tax incentives currently in place, that none of our taxes will go to war till the end of that program, which I'm not sure if it's 2016 or 2020. There's two programs, but there's one. So at least for 5 years, our tax dollars are all just going into the solar panels. And it also answers the other, you know, deep, deep longing of my life, direction of my life is protecting the environment. So that right now there's something we can all be doing. But that's my way, and you'll have your way. But it's important to look and to think about what are the ways that my life can do this, can express my deepest desire to protect human life and to protect the life of the world? When we recite the five mindfulness trainings, Tai Yi tells us to always say, when the question is asked, have I practiced, studied, and observed the mindfulness training read? He instructs us always to say, yes, I have. It's a really important practice that we do that always when we recite them and read them. Because what happens when we do that is the times that precept, that mindfulness training has been expressed through our life arises in our consciousness. Yes, I have. That's right, I have done that. It's wonderful. And we see, bit by bit, a transformation happening. And again, it is goalless. It is that wonderful term, Sanskrit word, that is applied all the time to what our practice needs to be, apranita. We do our practice without any goal in mind, without wanting anything in return. We do our practice for this moment. We touch a seed of peace or love in our own heart just for this moment. And we let it go completely. Don't have to hold on to anything. And we find that we have all the courage we've ever needed. All the trust that whatever happens, even the shocks, even the unexpected things, even the surprises, we can trust them. Because we know that birth and death don't touch us. We are not defined by that. We are not defined by me and you. And we can be completely at home in each moment, completely awake and welcoming to each thing that happens. That is touching the seed of peace in our hearts. And when we touch the seed of peace in our own heart, it is dropping that pebble into the pool, and the ripples go out forever, endlessly. This is not just idealistic thinking. We can touch and experience and come to know that for ourselves through practicing that. If we stand outside and say, oh, I don't know about that. If we stand outside of the precepts and say, I can't ever do that, then indeed they never will manifest. And if we see Kuan Yin, the heart of compassion, as existing outside of ourselves, as something on the altar or something separate, then Avalokiteshvara will never manifest in the world. Compassion will never live, because Avalokiteshvara only lives when we through our bodies. Peace only lives through our being. And so the marvelous and miraculous thing of being a human is that first we can do this, and second that not only do we have the ability to do it, we have the freedom. To create in the world what it is we want to see be in the world by giving our own lives to that. So when we are reciting the five mindfulness trainings, you know, it is important to always say, yes, I have studied, observed, and practiced the precept read. And if we what comes up in our consciousness when we say that was some area where we feel we haven't done as good a job as we'd like to. We don't say, no, I haven't. We say, I'll look into this. That's interesting. I'll look into it. So often, you know, when the mindfulness trainings become, and you know, I have to say that you know, the words are very helpful, how they're expressed, and sometimes they can also become a block because we take them literally. And instead of having them be like mindfulness bells for us to look inside our own hearts and minds and look into the life of the world, they become ways we judge ourselves as inadequate or judge others as inadequate, or the world as not being good enough. And that becomes a block for us then. You know, that is the very discriminative mind that the first mindfulness training is saying, we let go of that. We let go of that dualistic thinking. That discrimination. When we are practicing, as we are this weekend, of like we talked about last night, you know, touching the earth each step with our peace, looking at each other with the eyes of love, every moment coming back to nourish those wonderful, healing, nourishing seeds. When we are practicing like that, our practice is realization. When we practice like that, the flower of inner being arises naturally. And we don't need to discriminate about good and bad, right and wrong, should and shouldn't. And so we have this whole weekend to practice together that, letting go of our dualistic and discriminative thinking and coming back with full concentration of our intention to touch the earth each moment with our peace. Let the whole world be there with us, entrusting ourselves to the world and trusting the world just as it is. The breezes, the planes overhead, the birds in the rosebush, our own steps of peace. Letting go to be right here. We have a DVD of Thai, a talk by our teacher. And when I was down at Deer Park in March, I went to one of the monks and said, you know, we need a DVD for this non-residential retreat that's coming up. Some of you might know CQ. Do you know? He's a young Vietnamese monk. I don't know how old he is. I have no idea. He's a Vietnamese monk. And he said, oh, come with me. And he took me into a back room that was filled with every DVD that they've ever made of Thai. He said, "What do you want?" And so I just started pulling down these, you know, albums and going through them and I don't know. And so I picked two, and he said, "You can have as many as you want." And I picked two, and he said, he'd make copies for me. So he made copies and gave them to me. And then, and so I previewed them, and one of the ones I happened to choose, or happened to fall into my hands, I think was the basis of the book that we're reading. So it's really wonderful. I was really thrilled when I watched it. It's like, wow. Serendipity or whatever. Yeah. You know, we in our individual separate self, with our discriminative thinking, we see the world and all its suffering. And it is absolutely essential that we look. Because that is the energy of our practice. That is the energy that is the reason the Buddha sat under the Bodhi tree. It is the reason we sit on the cushion. And yet, at the same time, exactly at the same moment, we live in a world that is all goodness. That there is nothing but goodness. No matter how it's manifesting. And that is very hard to understand with our discriminative mind. The only way we truly understand that is through our practice, coming back to this breath, seeing what our thoughts are, letting them go, entrusting ourselves again to this moment. And when we get distracted, caught somewhere, then we come back simply to touching the earth with our peace, or come back to our deepest intention, breathing in and breathing it out, letting it hold us. And at some point, all the dualistic, discriminative thinking falls away. All our self-identification and self-centered desires fall away. And we see that from the very beginning, we've been part of everything, always, and it is all good. The suffering is the energy, and the response to it, the only response is compassion, because we've never been separate from any of it. And the only true ground of our being, that empty, non-separate illuminated mind consciousness, is compassion. And that's what the five mindfulness trainings rise out of. And we live there as well. That is what is essentially true about all existence. And when we begin to know that, we get glimmers of it. And when we begin to know it truly, then the mindfulness trainings express themselves without without a lot of effort. And we look for how they express themselves. And when we recite them, and ask ourselves, have I studied, practiced, and observed the mindfulness training read? We say, yes, I do. Yes, I have. Yes, I will. That's really, truly all we can do. So, we practice our biggest mind, touching the earth with peace, dropping pebbles of love into the pool of all life.